Our reading today comes from the book of Isaiah, the prophecy of Isaiah, chapter 2 and verses 1 to 5. The word that Isaiah, the son of Amoz, saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem. It shall come to pass in the latter days that the mountain of the house of the Lord shall be established as the highest of the mountains, and shall be lifted up above the hills. And all the nations shall flow to it, and many peoples shall come and say, Come, let us go up to the mountain of the Lord, to the house of the God of Jacob, that he may teach us his ways, and that we may walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go the law and the word of the Lord from Jerusalem. He shall judge between the nations and shall decide disputes for many peoples. And they shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. O house of Jacob, come, let us walk in the light of the Lord.
I'm going to talk just for a few minutes about Rudyard Kipling. It's more than 80 years since the author died, and he died in 1939 without ever knowing what happened to his son. Kipling's only son, John, had been keen to join the war effort, but he was rejected by the Navy because of his poor eyesight. Instead, and seemingly thanks to his father's connections, John Kipling was able to join the infantry of the 2nd Battalion Irish Guards. The young Kipling arrived in France on the 17th of August 1915, on his 18th birthday. And 6 weeks later, he was sent to the Battle of Loos. It was Monday, the 27th of September, and the battalion was instructed to cross the open ground. The onslaught of machine gun fire, though, was absolutely brutal. And sometime in the following hour, John Kipling disappeared. Hugh Cecil, who is a military historian, says, The battle was a disaster for the British. It was the first time that new volunteer soldiers had engaged in a battle, and there were huge casualties. Rudyard Kipling spent 4 years looking for his lost son, writing to every senior military figure there was, questioning the men, the other men from John's battalion, and basically approaching every organisation he could think of. That devastating experience of loss was to deeply affect and shape the rest of Kipling's life and work. And part of his way of coming to terms with John's death was to become involved with the Imperial War Graves Commission, which in 1960 changed its name to the Commonwealth War Graves Commission. Working with Winston Churchill, the two men ensured that all gravestones, regardless of military rank, were the same shape and size, because until that point, that hadn't been a given. So the long lines of matching gravestones, which today line war cemeteries, are their legacy. But as one of Britain's most famous authors, Kipling's role was also to give thought to the symbolism and wording for the memorials and gravestones, and to how the cemeteries abroad were to be ordered. Kipling was a committed Christian, and it was he who suggested that stones of remembrance in the cemetery should feature the biblical quotation from Ecclesiasticus 44, "Their name liveth forevermore." And that the gravestones of unknown soldiers should read, known unto God. He also chose the inscription on the cenotaph, which reads, the glorious dead. Yet despite his involvement with the commission, Kipling didn't agree with the patriotic notion of death for God, king, and country. One of his most famous quotes is, "If any question why we died, tell them, because our fathers lied." And for some people at that time, these words resonated with their belief that war was futile and senseless. Others, though, rejected the words, believing that there had to be some meaning to the deaths of their loved ones. For us, I would suggest that meaning lies in remembrance. There is power in the telling of the story. Telling stories is how we remember and how we connect, and how the memory of unknown and voiceless people remain alive in our hearts and in our consciences. And telling stories has been a part of every culture in every single age. In the story of Kipling's deep personal tragedy, there's a story to be told of incredible faith and determination. Faith that affirmed that in death we are equals. Faith that vowed that remembrance and commemoration should never be about status or rank or position. Faith that acknowledged the value and parity of each and every human life. Faith that held on to hope, even in the midst of the unknown and the unresolved, even in darkness and in despair. And faith that was determined not to be blindly, unquestioningly obedient. And faith that embraced the importance of memory and remembrance, particularly for those who are nameless and faceless to us, but who, as Kipling asserted, are known unto God. We too are inheritors of that same faith, and we too will remember. And today we remember not just the very worst that people can do to each other, but also the very best that people can be. The very best that human beings can be in the face of unspeakable suffering. There's a postscript to this story. Philip Mallet, an author who's written about Kipling, says, "It's one of the great ironies that Kipling should have been the person to select the phrase, 'known unto God for all unknown soldiers,' and then not know what happened to his own son." Well, in 1992, the Commonwealth War Graves Commission changed the inscription on the gravestone of an unknown soldier to read, "John Kipling." But there remained a number of niggling inconsistencies and outstanding questions. Then just 4 years ago, actually, in 2016, thanks to the work of a tenacious researcher, and over 80 years after Rudyard Kipling's death, that grave in France was indeed and finally confirmed as the last resting place of 18-year-old John Kipling.